This is a Pinball News production.
So the plan is just to have y'all get all your questions answered about how to do P-Rock stuff, how to build machines with the P-Rock, how to write software with the P-Rock, whether you're building a custom machine or doing a retheme. And so we have representatives from people that have done, you know, custom machines, like Josh Kugler, who you probably all know because he did the last seminar. So Josh Kugler with the Cougar Family Pin. Next to him is Kevin Kulik with the Skit B, who's doing the Predator. We have Eric Priebke, who did Cactus Canyon Continued, which is an extension of an existing game. And on the end, Scott Golux, who's doing Wrath of the Olympics, which is a fully custom machine that I believe is based on the Visual Pinball version, or is it totally new? Okay, so he's taken a visual game and created the real physical game behind it. So three of the games are fully custom.
The original one too.
Eric's game is we could call it a retheme or an extension. He's recreated the original rules and extended it. So let me just start by seeing, I mean, we could fill the whole time with your questions if you have them. So throw out general questions or pick a specific person and ask about their project or whatever you want. If there are none, I can ask some, but I'm hoping you guys have questions and want to know specific things.
We got another bird on the right.
I'm sorry.
Software questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Windows or Linux?
Windows or Linux?
Well, what's everybody doing?
It depends on what your mic is on.
Okay. This one going? It just really seems to depend on what you like. If you're more comfortable in a Windows environment, then obviously you're going to want to do that. But it does work on both. And if you're going to eventually upgrade to like a single board kind of computer setup, I haven't found one that runs on Windows yet, so you're going to have to go Linux.
Windows sucks, sorry, you know.
I strongly that wasn't me.
Linux if you know Linux, but I think more of the machines here right now are running Windows than Linux, I
believe. Oh. Is one on two?
The game code itself is actually portable between them. I can set my code up to run on Windows or on Linux with no changes whatsoever. Once the framework is installed, the actual game code that's written in the PyProc game works on either one with no changes, essentially.
As well as on a Mac, if you wanted to run on like a Mac Mini.
Pick up the mic.
If you wanted to run on a Mac Mini, so you can run it on a Mac, as I said, all my development was done, and I would just hook that to the PyProc to do, you know, most of my play initially.
Next question.
Yes? Is there a language that works any better? And once you have it compiled, is there something like an interpreter that brings it into a track, or can you just take the compile tool?
Python's really an interpreted language, I believe, where it does compile. So you could probably, you know, you can program in C++. There's probably nothing that would prevent you from using another language, but then the initial framework's not going to be available. You'd really have to start from scratch, which means, you know, creating that mode queue or some mechanism like that. So you'd really be adding a significant amount of effort to your project. Python, really relatively easy language to learn if you've programmed in almost anything else. The hardest part is getting comfortable with the fact there are no brackets of any kind. It completely relies on indentation for doing things. The positive to that is the code's really clean and readable, so that's kind of the plus side.
The framework has been ported to some other languages also. Is Jimmy's available or is it still closed? There's a .NET version of the framework that provides all the same basics that the Python framework did. He basically just converted everything that was in the Python version to .NET. So I think it's been ported to some other things. I don't know if they're available. There's the Java version of it. But they provide the low-level library, so you can write in anything you want. But like you said, you have to start completely with nothing if you go that way.
In the back.
Just to follow up on what you said with the .NET port, are you talking about that port done specifically to the .NET management framework where you can throw any of the Microsoft .NET compatible languages on top of it, or is that still specifically looking for like the which is mostly geared towards .NET?
That I don't know the specifics of because I haven't used it. I don't know if you know any more about it than I do.
I do. So it's a straight .port .NET. You can use any .NET library with it. If you want to pull in .NET networking or any other feature, you can. Yes.
This one's for Kevin, actually. Because Python is a scripting language, are you guys compiling the code protected so that people won't get access to the source? Is the source available? How are you?
Kevin, I'm going to start repeating the questions just so everybody can hear them. Oh. The question is, Are you, because it's Python's an interpreted language, can we compile the code into some, you know, some bytecode or some compiled version that people can't just rip off and steal?
This is a question I get a lot, actually. The problem with that is you're dealing with, you know, I have to move a product to an end user that contains potentially lethal and destructive voltages. So I can't just say go ahead. But on the other hand, the PROC framework is so well documented and open that there's no way I could actually stop that. So we could consider this, you know, an open source project, but the creator would say don't. But like I said, I can't stop anybody. Just know that you can kill yourself and burn your house down. So read up.
Nobody told me that before I started.
Well, then good job.
The technical answer is that there is a way to compile Python code into bytecode so it can't be read, but most people don't take that step. Next question. In front, yes.
Okay, let's talk about your skill sets going into building a pinball machine. What backgrounds do you guys have? And did you find it easy to get into the rocks?
Dave's question is, Mr. Moderator, you should have actually introduced your people and told us their background.
I think we should just run down.
So there. I will just let them go forth.
So my background is actually mechanical engineering. I do product development full-time for my real job. And at first, getting into building your own custom pinball machine kind of scared the crap out of me because my level of knowledge of software is so small that, you know, I'd have a hell of a time trying to get anywhere. But through the Pinball Controllers Forum, there's some awesome step-by-step tutorials to get anybody with just a basic limited sense of software, at least to a flipping machine. And then by connecting through people through the VP forums and pinball controllers, I found some great resources like Frank and Ryan that have just done a wonderful job doing the software. But for me particularly, doing the artwork, building the machine, the mechanical stuff, getting the electrical all put together, that was my, I guess, big skill set. But finding those other people to help you out with the other side of it, you know, I don't know if I just got lucky with those two guys, but it seems like there's a lot of people out there that are just really excited about willing to help and see new pinball machines.
I'm a systems administrator to begin with, so I don't do any high volume of programming in any complicated languages, but I had a lot of prior experience in scripted languages like PHP and Perl and things you would use for like server maintenance. The advantage for me with the Python framework is it's a similar language to what I had used, and it's very scriptable and readable, so it was easy for me to adapt. I didn't know any Python when I started, but it only took me about a month to learn the new syntax. So I had some programming background, but not a whole lot. And I think anybody with a logical sense, the hardest part about programming is understanding the logic of how to, you know, looping through things and counting things and stashing away flags for later. And if you know how to handle the logic, you can learn any language. And a Python is a pretty easy one to learn.
Yeah, just...
Is this thing on?
Nope. Yeah. All right. Well, to expand on what he was talking about, it doesn't take a programmer to start programming. A lot of people will say, you know, oh, I would totally do what you're doing if I went to school for programming. I should go to school, but I can tell you, I went to school for programming for 4 straight years, and I learned more like in the first month of actually just messing with stuff directly than I ever did in school. But I guess that would be an intro to my background. I have I have a bachelor's degree in C++ and object-oriented programming, but my day job before that was Flash developer and a little bit of a system administration.
I do have a computer science degree, so that's 30 years I've been doing some level of programming, but I also have an MBA, so I've really spent my career in management leading technology organizations, but know enough to be dangerous coding. But I think the valid point here is really understanding the logic. So if you can think through the game logic you want, learning how to put that into Python or code is really relatively easy. The complexity of the code, and I can pull it up on my computer later if people want to see what some of the code looks like, really isn't that complicated. A typical game mode is probably 100 lines or 200 lines of code. You're saying, when this switch hits, score these points. Or, you know, when this switch hits, now they need to hit this switch. It's really not rocket science in that regard.
So it's not rocket science. Thank you. So if somebody wants to, say, write a mode to do a multiball or something, Eric, how... They just have this blank framework in front of them that we're saying is easy to use, but how do they go and learn how to write that mode?
For a multi-ball specifically, because of all the things the framework provides, you just tell it how many balls you want to launch and add the rules you want to handle for the switches. You know, this switch is a jackpot, this switch is whatever, and you call the switches out by a written, like a label name, so you know it's not a lot of numbers and confusing stuff. You can just... It reads just like plain English, and add a little handling for when a couple of the balls drain and we're back down to one, shut yourself off. It's really kind of building blocks that the framework provides.
Just to provide a little more color, in my multi-ball mode, it's running all the time, and it's just looking for a hit to the Newton ball because that's what enables a lock. And once it sees that, it just says, okay, lock is enabled, and it starts to monitor for a ball hitting the lock switch. And it does that. It increments a counter and says, okay, one ball is locked. It tracks that once three balls have been locked. As Eric said, it tells the system, all right, throw three balls into play or five balls into play or six balls into play. As each ball drains, it'll report back, hey, a ball drained. You can do something if you want. If not, probably you wait until it comes back and says there's only one ball left. Multiball says, I'm done. Normal gameplay resumes. So again, in that module, just two or three things to track it. And then whatever logic, again, for scoring, is you're monitoring for a switch. Did my ramp get hit? It's 5,000. Did this ramp get hit? You know, it's super jackpot. It's 5 million or whatever it might be.
I think it's pretty interesting that the guys on my left and right, who both wrote a similar game, have completely different ways they handle multiball than what I did. Whereas Josh said, you know, you control all of yours in one single script. Mine is, I think, five scripts long. I keep track of the targets to light locks. I keep track of the each eject, you know, to actually make the locks. And when in multiball itself, I just let the trough handle everything. By when it starts, you just tell it how many is supposed to be in there. And if there's more than that, just empty one out and wait and check again. So I think it's pretty interesting that between... The small group of people up here, we've all come up with our own different ways, and they all work in the end product.
But I'm not sure those are necessarily different from the standpoint. So in my module, I'm tracking those locks, which is the same as you're tracking your stand-ups. Now, I don't know if you're putting in multiple modes for that, and maybe that's what you're saying is different. But even in mine, I'm installing potentially multiple modes within that one document or that one class.
Yeah, what I was saying is it's interesting that we all took this a completely different approach and all ended up with the same result. And I think that's just kind of a nod to the open availability of the framework.
Let's see if there are any other software questions, and then we'll switch over to some hardware, how to wire up the driver boards and build a machine with custom technology. Any other questions about the software, how to build games around the PROC, how to use the framework? Yes?
Didn't one of the panel run into a situation where the Python upper-level framework wasn't good enough and you had to go to the lower-level API?
So the question before we have an answer is, was there a situation where the framework, all the modes we have built into the framework, was there a situation where that wasn't enough and they had to get lower-level and dig into the actual low-level interface to the PROC? Anybody?
I thought I did once, but as it turned out, I thought I was going to have to modify the framework to allow coinage and pay-to-play, but in the end, I was able to take care of that fairly simply with using the framework after all.
Certainly, the framework itself I've extended in some ways, but as far as getting lower than that, I haven't had to yet. The one thing Jerry talked about is I'm dealing with my general illumination, trying to run off a driver board, and I'm getting a little flickering, and I might have to go to a lower level to get the on-off speed less than milliseconds to get it down to microseconds to get around a little bit of the flicker. That's the only thing I've come across where maybe I'll have to go deeper.
So the truth is the framework just extends the low-level API anyway. So everything you can do in the low level is exposed to you in the upper level. So you just build on those building blocks and move forward from there. You shouldn't ever have to go to the low level, but you can build on top of the framework and do more things it yourself. Let's talk a bit about installing the boards. And I know Josh mentioned a lot of that in his seminar. But Scott, maybe you can give us your experience actually setting up the machine, dropping in driver boards. I imagine a lot of people are intimidated by the amount of wiring a pinball machine would present to them and how to connect things together.
Yeah, that does get to be maybe somewhat daunting, but when you kind of take things one step at a time, it's very straightforward and very easy to do. So when I was building Wrath of Olympus, I kind of kept everything, the playfield, completely separate onto a rotisserie, and then I just made my own simple little like mounting plate where I mounted the P-Rock, my three driver boards, and then it was many evenings where I just make my own wiring harnesses, and it's as simple as just getting, you know, rolls of wire and your clips and sticking them into Molex connectors. And then just, like I said, following some of the tutorials online was so straightforward, and understanding where things get mapped to, what the pins mean. If you've got a basic low-level understanding of how to read a schematic, it'll get you as far as you need to. So overall, you know, going through and wiring with the PROC system and the PD boards is just really simple and really straightforward.
So what do you do when something goes wrong? When you wire something up or something stops working, what do you do?
Well, that kind of just gets into how well you can troubleshoot stuff. But when we were building the machine, one of the first things we ran into is we were having some issues with the VUC. And turns out we were enabling it instead of pulsing it. And you learn some of these key things really quick. And
he said VUC, V-U-K.
Yeah, sorry. I was swearing at it after a little bit. But, you know, so you start seeing some smoke, and then you blow some fuses. And the first thing is you just go back to, well, one of the nice things about the PD16 boards is they've got little lights, indicators to tell you, you know, where the power is on and where it's off. So it's really easy to tell, you know, which fuse is out. So you can go double check that. And then you go back into the base code and, okay, why is this not working? Oh, we enable lamps. We don't enable coils. We pulse coils. So there's a little of those learning experiences that you go through. But fundamentally, it's just basic troubleshooting and problem solving. It's so simple. All the coils, everything that actually really has power is pretty much straight wiring. The switches and lamps, most of those are all in a lamp matrix. So usually if you're going to have one thing out, you're going to see a whole row out. And it makes it a lot easier to go through and troubleshoot and find out what's wrong and get back and fix it.
Josh, you have something to add?
Yeah, by the way, I think that the doc clearly tells you not to use enable with coils. So just, you read the docs, it clearly tells you that. And it's fine.
I don't know how to read, so yeah.
Yeah. So if you know how to work, you know, deal with switch matrix issues and lamp matrix issues, it's pretty much those same types of things. The one thing, as I mentioned earlier, I use the pinball controller boards, and two out of my three are mounted under the playfield. And that just, again, reduced the amount of wiring going up and forth. Wiring's expensive, so that was nice as well, but made it a lot easier, especially I also used a rotisserie for a while in doing my work, and that way I had a lot less wiring. Every time you turn the rotisserie, the wire gets all twisted, and it's kind of helped me avoid, you know, those challenges as well.
So who has questions about actually putting together a system with this, with these boards and wiring them up, and is there anything we need to talk about there? How many of you actually want to build custom machines? Okay,
wow.
So there's a bunch of you. And and do you all feel like you know enough about the software, about the hardware to actually build the machine, or is there something missing? Yes. So if you were Dave, you would say, well, you didn't even introduce yourself, and you didn't, but yes. Yeah, so my name is Jerry Stellenberg. The company is Multimorphic, which used to be pinballcontrollers.com. And yeah, the PROC was originally my idea, my design. We introduced it in 2009 as a controller board for people to customize their machines. It's grown to a control system that people could use to build custom machines. And as you can see, the community's taken it and run with it. We have dozens and dozens of people who are building machines or retheming machines, and some of them are more active on our forums than other people, but everybody's really friendly, really helpful, and they get on the forums and post about their projects, and they some people have very basic questions they need help with, and some people are they never talk to us until the machine's done and they're showing pictures and we're like, where did you guys come from? But yeah, so the community is real supportive and helpful, and it's kind of a neat experience to watch.
So why did you take a pure-based approach as opposed to a microcontroller approach, an embedded microchipset, and are there plans to revise that?
The question is, why does the PROC work through a real computer? Why are you writing the code on the real computer instead of some embedded microcontroller? Do any of you guys want to take that one? Okay, Eric?
The obvious advantage you get right away is you can use all of the features of the computer to do whatever you would like. You can drive other USB devices with the computer. In my case, I'm running the color display directly from the computer. You couldn't do that at all with just a standard microcontroller that's just reacting to certain small things. So I don't know if that was Jerry's original idea, but the fact that you have the computer in there and you can leverage anything that that computer could do to do something in your game, whether you want it to control servos or whether you want to use the networking to do some kind of internet-based tournament scoring or post scores directly. The Dutch pinball guys just started doing a thing where their high scores are posted directly to the Dutch pinball site. That, to me, is the biggest advantage, that you have all of those resources available.
So one other point on that, and then we'll have to wrap it up because we're about out of time, is that because we're using a regular computer instead of an embedded controller, the thing never goes end of life. The PROC talks to a computer over USB. So as long as computers come out that have USB ports, no matter if it's now or 20 years from now, the computer you can go to the store and buy will work with the PROC. So if you had an embedded controller, then you're always limited to the technology in that controller, and you'd have to rebuild the board or build a new embedded system anytime you wanted to take advantage of newer technologies or newer features. So sorry we don't have more time. If you have more questions, please just catch us as we're wrapping up or walking out. We'll all be in the exhibit hall showing off our machines. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.